Welcome to A Break in the Action, where we take a break from the business of our days to focus on outdoor pursuits and the traditional sporting lifestyle. Join us for discussion and interviews on vintage and modern break action shotguns, sporting literature, outdoor leisure, and reviews of best-in-class gear, accessories, and destinations. So pour yourself a drink, sit back, relax, and let's take a break in the action. A Break in the Action is proud to be sponsored by Dewberry of Ireland, B&P Shot Shells, Negrini Cases, and Cole Fine Guns and Gunsmithing. And now, here's your host, shotgun collector, wing shooter, and sporting clays enthusiast, Ryan Dowdy.
I want to start this episode off by congratulating Stephen in South Chesterfield, Virginia. Steven's name was drawn as the winner of our quarterly Best Gear giveaway, and I'll be sending him a fantastic Upland strap vest from Tom Beckby this week. Being entered to win is easy. Just make sure you're signed up as a member of our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/abreakintheaction. I'll be announcing the details of our second quarter giveaway in the next few weeks. Now, hands down, I have gotten more requests for a sequel to the Best Shotguns Under $1,000 episode. In that first episode, we talked about some good used double barrel shotgun options. Unfortunately, some of the guns I mentioned in that episode now command prices reliably higher than $1,000, but I still think it offered some good alternatives to what I would say are inferior quality new shotguns in that under $1,000 price range. Today, we're going to talk about options from $1,000 up to $3,000. We'll touch on a few new models because I think this is a price point where you can start to get a reliable, good quality double. One that shouldn't need service, but if service is needed, the reputable manufacturer and availability parts shouldn't make it too much of a headache. A few weeks ago, I reached out to a few of the pros at Orvis, gunroom manager Greg Carpinello and gunsmith Connor Carson, for their input. They were happy to join on the conversation. Guys, thank you for helping with this episode. I don't think that we can make this a comprehensive list, but especially when we get to the used gun options, I hope that it will just add some interesting, possibly new options to the shotgun buyers list who have a budget in this $1,000 to $3,000 range. So let's get into it. Not much of an introduction is needed on this one. Let's start off with what won't offer too many surprises, the new gun options. Most of what I came up with were over and unders. I personally couldn't really land on much by way of new side-by-sides in that $3,000 and under category. So we're going to talk about over and unders. To add a bit of order to our list, I'm going to break it down into a few categories. Let's say field and all around, and then maybe something a little bit more dedicated to sporting. So does that sound good?
Sure, absolutely.
Good, good. Greg, how about you get us started?
So I'm going to start with what I describe as the Ford F-150 of the over-under shotgun market. And excuse me, someone described this gun to me as like having a blue blazer in your closet because you can always put it on and you're ready to go. And that would be the Silver Pigeon.
Yep, of course.
Unequivocally.
Yep.
Someone said to me one time, you don't need to drink beer to know what Budweiser is, and you don't need to be in the shooting sports to know the name Beretta, right?
Yeah.
And the Beretta Silver Pigeon, and Connor can chime in on this because we're not always in the sales room together, but whenever we have shooting events at Orvis or just walk-ins, anybody walks in the door, I would say, safely saying, Connor, the majority of the time, well, Connor can still hear me.
Yeah, it's definitely the majority of the time. It's just they have that brand recognition that, they've been in business so long and between media and movies, even like Greg said, even people who aren't necessarily shotgun shooters, they know the name Beretta. They've been around so long that they have that recognition that everybody seems to know about,
Yeah. Years back, I did a podcast that featured quite a bit of discussion on the 686 Silver Pigeon, and it was referred to in that episode as the Honda Accord of doubles.
Yeah, right. Same idea.
And that definitely wasn't meant as a slight in any way towards the gun. I think everybody agrees that maybe while common, an Accord is absolutely reliable, and it sort of sets the standard for the industry. It's easy to say the same of the 686 Silver Pigeon.
Yeah, Silver Pigeon 1 or 3. You want to go fancier, they did the 5, but in general, the Silver Pigeon, and people come in and say, do you have any Silver Pigeons? And we start there, and I always say, listen, I can lay, you know, 312 gauges out on the rack or 320 gauges, and you can feel them all. But a lot of times, people just want to have the, they just want to have the comfort of having a Silver Pigeon.
Yeah, good point.
You never have to explain particularly if it's your first gun and you go somewhere, and whether we want to know that brand matters what we buy, but when you unsheath the Silver Pigeon for the first time with people you don't know, no one's ever going to say, oh, what'd you buy that gun for? Right? Just bang, you bought a Beretta, you're good to go. Join the club.
Yep. I 100% agree.
Mm-hmm. And I think that Connor would add, not to speak for him, but any decent gunsmith worth their salt, Connor can work on that gun.
Yeah, absolutely. Berettas, I mean, even, you know, not even recent, not only recent Berettas, but ones from past years too, through the 80s into the 90s, and currently, they're all very straightforward to work on. Everything that you need to get to is right there. You know, it's. I often compare them to Legos. They're very. It's still it's an over under shotgun design, so it's somewhat complex in the way it works, but working on them, you know, changing out parts, replacing parts, repairing parts, things like that, you know, autosave deletes, top lever spring replacement. It's all super straightforward. It's right there. I can get, for most issues, 99% of issues with Berettas, I can get in and out of them in less than an hour, which is just huge. And then parts availability is, you know, even with the older models, you know, places like, you know, parts dealers out there that I work with are able to get me parts for even somewhat obscure models. It's really just a dream to work on them. They're very simple. And in that sense, I guess the comparison to a Honda Accord is very apt because it's, you know, cheap to fix, right? So it's a great, you know, package that, you know, because everything breaks, right? Eventually, even the finest guns, so, you know, springs and pins, having that comfort, as Greg referenced, of knowing that when something breaks, you can get it fixed quickly and easily is just a great thing.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And obviously, you could say the exact same thing for the Browning Satori.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny because we were not, Orvis's, you know, Dalliance and Browning ones, we brought a B-25 and we brought 12 B-25s and 6-12s. 620s, they're very rare birds, and they'll pop up every once in a while that someone will find, hey, I have an Orvis branded Browning. And then when I started working at Orvis, you know, people were like, do you have any Brownings, right? Sure. So we had never really ended our relationship with Browning, but then we started really bringing more and more in. And I would, you know, the CXS line and the new side of Browning Satori's is a really good shotgun. And one of the things that strikes me about Browning, and we can talk about used Satori's perhaps later, but they're consistent across the line. Every time you pull out a CXS out of the box, it looks like the previous CXS. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like you're not going to get, you know, the most ridiculous wood you've ever seen, but you're going to get a really nice, that Browning gloss finish on there. The fit finish is always going to be good. There's never any concern about the bluing not looking nice. There's never any salts bleeding through. They're just executed really precisely and consistently over and over and over again. And you know, I think about, and Connor can speak to this, but I think about the guns that come in that are old and still trucking, and really they're only in for a strip clean and lube, and that's the Satori.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep. And you guys also offer Fabarm. Those are really nice shotguns to check out too. I've had a few Fabarm shotguns over the years, and I think they've been really nice for that price point. I think they're really a great option to look into.
Yep.
All of this is going to come down to personal preference, of course. If Beretta and Browning are the big name makers that draw people into the shop, Fab Arm is just another one that they really should put their hands on to compare to. I think a lot of people are really going to be surprised if they put their hands on one. They're really, really nice guns. I don't know all the models of the Fab Arm Elos, but they're definitely worth checking out.
I would say, like, so Fab Arm is the lesser known brand, right? So that there's a thing. Connor and I both experienced. There's a little bit of explanation going on with Fab Arm. I'm always like, oh, I've never heard of Fab Arm. Well, they're a 100-year-old company with a military tactical hunting presence in Europe that is tried and true. They're sold all across Europe. They're sold in Canada. They're sold in the United States. And the company itself had some fits and starts. They were associated for a long time with Heckler and Koch and even Ithaca. They made some sporting guns for Ithaca as well. That's a rare bird if you come across it. And it wasn't until, you know, Cesar Guarini got started and established Fab Arm USA that then they got a solid marketing, solid advertising, solid gunsmithing platform behind them. And then you have Fab Arm USA, and Orvis has been, you know, been on board with them for the past 10 years. So in that field gun side of things, the D2 platform, there's a, on the Fab Arm side, there's the Fab Arm D2, which is an aluminum frame gun, primarily a field gun. And then they do their Elite, which is a case colored steel receiver. And then the Orvis Elos D2, which is a coin finish, but steel receiver as well. And I can't keep those Orvis Elos D2s in stock. Hmm. You know, every time I sell them all out, then I get an order. I make an order and then I get a wait list and then they come in and I sell them again. And one of the things we get, the questions we get a lot is, well, which one's the better gun? And to me, and again, I'm sure listeners as well, they'll have all their opinions, but to me, in terms of the action and the quality of the barrels, becomes sort of a Ford, Dodge, Chevy argument. So let's put a Beretta, let's put a Browning, let's put a Fab Arm out on the table. And have a customer take a look at them and see which one they want. The Beretta, the Fab Arm Tribor barrel is a really, really nicely well-made, well-struck barrel, and their chokes are outstanding. And that's really when I start to talk about it, I do talk about the Fab Arm chokes and the Tribor barrel and the fact that their chokes are steel-proof all the way through full. Really, it's and the fit and finish on the Fab Arm is consistently excellent.
Right. Yeah. And just to add to that, I think surprise is often the right word. As Greg mentioned, Fab Arm is not necessarily a well-known brand. Their association with Guarini is somewhat known about, but what I often find is, and I have this experience almost regularly, when folks come in, they're kind of on the fence between a few guns. They want to see a Beretta. They want to see a Browning. Oftentimes I'll take a Fab Arm, especially the newer Fab Arm, the N2 RS model. It's a dedicated clays gun, and for clay shooters, especially when they're on the fence between these guns, I'll put an N2 RS in their hands. It may not have been the first gun to catch their glance as far as name recognition, but I'll put it in their hands, and it really, almost every time, it's that surprise of, wow, this is actually a great gun, right? And often, I mean, I've had several sales that, you know, people have come in looking for, you know, I don't push people in any particular direction other than what they're looking for, but they'll kind of be on the fence between a Beretta and a Browning, and I'll put that Fab Arm N2 RS in their hands, and a lot of times they end up buying that gun because it feels great. So, you know what I mean? It's just it comes down to people's preferences. I don't push people. I don't like to go that tactic. But you know, Fab Arm as a brand is definitely something that we're proud to have on our rack, because they offer such a great product, you know. And like Greg said, it at a certain point it becomes the you know, Ford, Chevy, Dodge argument, right? But it's just they you know, there's so many great products out there, but the lineups that we have, and especially, you know, our Fab Arms too, I like to put them in people's hands and kind of see what they think.
Definitely. Yeah. And they look nice, I think.
They do look nice.
You obviously have to have a product that works and is suitable for its intended use. But when you're spending $2,000 or $3,000, you want it to look nice too. And I think that they do a really nice job with this. I've actually had experience with FabArm for a long time. I think my very first FabArm was a Max Lion, one of those old H&K imports back in the late 90s, I think it was. I'll throw a few other models out onto our list in the new gun category. Rizzini is a complicated brand because there is B Rizzini and I Rizzini. I Rizzini is most often marketed under the Fair, F-A-I-R label. B Rizzini, I think, puts out a nicer gun these days. The BR110 line is a fantastic over and under to look at. I think it represents just a ton of value for money.
Yeah,
that was the gun I was going to refer. The BR110 is a great gun, and we don't rep Rizzini, but I've actually reviewed Rizzini in another context. The BR10 is a really, really nice gun, and we had a BR10. And Connor, correct me if I'm wrong. That BR10 Sporting 28 gauge.
Oh yeah, that was a BR110. That gun was ridiculous. I got to tell you, it was if
did you say 28 gauge.
It was
That's the gun that I bought after Phil Borgeli raved about it on our 28 gauge episode several months back. They're great guns, and I think they're really hard to beat for the money. I wish mine had longer barrels. The one I found used just a 28 inch barrel set. Another great gun that I recommend to people often is the Connecticut Shotgun CSMC Revelation. That's a great little made in the USA 20 gauge over and under. It's an especially good option if you really want just something different and a little bit more unique. Yep.
They have very nice wood, and the case coloring is very nice with those guns.
Yep. And traditional bone and charcoal case color hardening is something extremely hard to come by these days, especially in this price range. So the only new option in the sporting category that I would throw out, and I have admittedly zero experience with this gun, but they're really popular, is Yildiz. That pro sporter seems to be a pretty nice dedicated clays gun for the money.
So in another context, it's important to delineate. There's Yildiz, and then there's the Pro Sporter line, right? And they're made by the same company, but and I've not handled a Yildiz on the low end line, so I don't want to speak about something that I have zero familiarity with, so I can't talk to it. On the Pro Star line, you're talking about a really well constructed shotgun, a Boss Action. I've just been in and out of a high end Pro Star. And the machining on the monoblock, the machining on the Action, the fit and finish, it's a damn nice shotgun. And it's a quality Boss Action. It closes with a definitive snap. The thing that struck me about the ProStar that I would recommend is that at about 8.5 pounds, the distribution of the weight between the hands is ideal. It's a really an easy swinging. Connor and I often talk about, like, sometimes when you get a heavy gun that actually feels nimble and lively, and that ProStars are really good. The ProStars are just a different line. There are a number of ProStar dealers in the United States, people that I like and admire. And I was pleased to get this gun, and I can say that at the price point, it's a little higher. When you go into the hand engraved gun, and it is hand engraved, you're jumping into the $6,000, but in the $3,000 to $4,000, that ProStar line is definitely worth checking out. It's just not a huge footprint of dealers in the United States, but they are out there.
Yeah. Like I said, I've never had one in my hands or shot one, but they sure seem popular.
And I have one, Don and I have one in the shop right now that we're about to do a deep dive on. And, it's a nice gun.
Well, I don't think we shook things up too much with our new shotgun suggestions. So now let's move on to used options. And this is really what interests me, because this is how I usually like to shop for shotguns. The guns in this price range usually represent much more gun than you're actually paying for. Whether these guns just aren't as popular, or in some cases, they might just flat out be unknown. You can really get into some interesting and great quality shotguns if you're spending that up to $3,000 mark on a used gun. Better finishes, more interesting wood, even hand engraving. So What are a few that come to your mind? Connor, do you want to lead us off on this one?
Yeah, sure. So in that price range, I think you can potentially get a lot for your money, right? So for use field guns, it's you know, and again, Greg can, I think, shed a lot of light on this. But a lot of those older Berettas, the 6.86 series, as you might have mentioned, the older, you know, Orvis shotguns are always a great bet as well. We had a series of fantastic guns coming from Beretta that usually can be had for under that 3,000 mark, depending on the make and model. But I might hand this one to Greg, just he might be able to shed a bit more light on what people are looking for in that price range.
Yeah, well, let me back you up a bit and highlight something that you said. The co-branded Orvis shotguns are always a favorite category of mine on Guns International. Over the years, I know Orvis has collaborated with some great manufacturers to put out some great models with the Orvis name on them.
As soon as you brought that question up, not a week goes by where I don't get a phone call about, hey, I saw this or I bought this. The Orvis Berettas, the Black Receiver, the Uplander,
and the
Waterfowl.
Yep.
Straight stock or pistol grip. The Orvis Uplanders, and Uplanders is a sort of a misleading name because we've given the name Uplander about 30 different models that we've made over the years, but the Orvis Uplander by Beretta, and some of those guns have been ridden pretty hard, and we see them. But in general, Subgate 2800 dollars, depending on how they look. A 2028 combo will get you north of $4,000, particularly if it comes in a fancy original Orvis leather trimmed green case. Those are really nice. But the Uplanders, regardless of the configuration in terms of straight stock or whatever, those are really good guns. You're guaranteed superb wood. I mean, so those guns were coming in. That wood was special ordered from Beretta coming into Manchester. We had three gunsmiths working all the time doing true custom stocks and hand finishing that wood. We have an old drying room in Manchester to this day. Those guns are amazing, period. Just got to be careful. They haven't been shot too hard. Some of them are loose. Some have been rebuilt. Some of the barrels are not blued. They're actually Brunaton, which doesn't affect the wear that off of that much, but it's worth noting they command a little less money. So Orvis Waterfowler, the 12-gauge Waterfowler we made, is just as good a gun as you can put your hands on. They sell consistently. If they come in and they're clean, I just know that's a $2,500 gun. If it's beat up or chopped. One of the things you got to look out for on the Orvis guns is because we were doing so many custom guns, we had a lot of female shooters in. There's a lot of the 20s, 28s with very short stocks, 13, 13 and a half. Sometimes you can find new wood for them, but it's not going to be as nice as you had. But that's something when you're looking through listings to just keep an eye on that the length of pull on those guns.
Yep. But, Use shotgun buying 101. Make sure you get and know how to interpret those important specs.
Right. But the Orvis series of guns were just great. People are always, the Satori's, both on the field and sporting side, anytime we get a Satori in, those old Satori fields are really cool. The Satori Hunters, right? And they can be had, depending on condition, from 1,000 to 2,000 all day long. Without a doubt. And the Silver Pigeons, the Silver Pigeons that I like, and I actually took some notes, the old 6.86S is a cool gun. And honestly, I would argue that the fit finish on an old 6.86S is nicer than a new Silver Pigeon. The White Wings, the Onyx, we have
No, that's a SV10 Prevail. That's going to be a sporting Prevail gun. But that era of Beretta. We saw a lot of newer Berettas. We like them a lot. But there's kind of, in my opinion, this might just be me, but there was a certain era of Beretta that it seemed like every gun I put my hands on from that era is just wow. You know what I mean? That the fit, finish, the wood, it's just that there was this little, it wasn't even that little, it was just this time frame of Beretta where everything they were turning out was just top notch, both aesthetically and mechanically. Over the years with, you know, costs of things going up and price of labor going up, you know, there must have been, from a manufacturer's point of view, certain concessions that had to be made to make the guns a bit less, you know, expensive to make, right? Because they didn't want to have to pass that on to their consumers. But there's that era, and that's why, you know, again, this price range in the used market, you can get so much for your money. You know, that era of Berettas, I want to say from, gosh, I mean, Greg might know more specifically, but maybe from like the late 80s, you know, into the maybe early 2000s. There's that a lot of those guns were just really, really special. We're talking, you know, 682, and a lot of these guns came in field configurations, 682s, you know, all the way up through. It's just, you know, and Greg has his love for the BL series, and you know, there's just so much something special about those guns, just the fit and finish and the wood and the finishing. It's really something else.
I think we can't overlook the Superpost, without a doubt. The trick is, and I don't know how much you want to dig into the discussion of Saltwood.
Yeah. Yep. I actually do have a podcast out on Saltwood guns. Definitely something to be aware of if you're looking for that kind of that late 60s era Browning Superposed.
Yep. So when you're in the Superposed kind of, and I'm talking for the money we're talking about, I'm talking about generally the Lightning. And 66 to 69, and I just read this recently as I was pregnant, 90% of their stock, 67 to 69, 90% of their stocks are salt guns.
Wow.
So it's important to, when you're looking at a used Superposed, to know the serial number and know the era when they're built. And if you're in question, and the information on the internet is like, it's kind of hard to sometimes spotting a serial number for a Browning, but Art's Gun Shop in Missouri, if you give them the serial number, they'll tell you when it was built. So a little plug for Art's, because they're that good and they're that expertise. But pre-war Lightnings, can be had depending on condition. There's always a lot of factors, and sub gauges always command more in that $1,000 to $2,500 range. And then up until 48 to 60, the 12s are about 15. The 20s, if they're nice, can go up to $3,000, but certainly worth it. Connor, we have a Magnum, or we did have.
We do currently. Yeah, we have a Superposed Magnum, which is a little bit of a rare bird. I actually don't know if rare is the right word, but it's somewhat uncommon. It's a factory 3-inch. It's got 30-inch barrels. It's not a Lightning. So it's a, you know, pretty big, heavy gun. But those guns are, they were originally designed, I would imagine, for field use, for, you know, heavy loads, duck, goose, things like that. But nowadays, they obviously still could be used for those purposes, being a factory 3-inch. But because of their weight and balancing and things like that, they're often very desirable for glaze guns, because they can be had at relatively low price. I mean, I think under $1,500, between $1,000 and $1,500 is a fair price, depending on condition. And it's, they're just a fantastic option. Of course, if you don't mind the weight, being in a duck blind or, you know, hunting for goose, you know, perfectly great field gun. But you know, a lot of people end up using them. I guess you could use them for both, right? Clays and, your waterfowl shooting.
They're just, they're not steel safe. So you'd have to use
them. Yeah. Right. So yeah, non-tox. Yeah.
Good. And then checking for saltwood, a gunsmith can do it for you, or just as long as you know the serial numbers, but don't believe anybody who tells you that it's not a saltwood gun until you confirm that as a buyer.
Yep. Trust but verify.
Don't do that.
And even if they tell you that sort of salt mitigation methods have been
used, that's
lots of different things. If you can't get the opportunity to pull the stock, you're jammed up.
Yeah. About a year back, I had a great conversation with Art on those salt guns. And he is absolutely the foremost expert on the issue here in the United States for sure. So if you're looking at a Browning from that era, I would definitely chat with Art before you buy it. Greg, what are some other interesting used shotguns on your list?
So you and I had chatted as an aside. I would say the SKBs, the Ithacas and the Weatherby SKBs, and in the over-under market, that the 500, the 600, the 700 series guns, built like tanks. I mean, absolutely built for the long haul. Some of them are really beautifully engraved with some nice wood. A lot of them have that heavy, sort of glossy, poly finish on it. It looked like the 1100 kind of had it, that, but it's durable. Again, they're heavy, but they're really built very well. They're often overlooked. If you can get access to the Blue Book of Gun Values, you can always kind of get a sense of what the model is. Just beware that you're buying an SKB built by SKB of Japan, right? That's important because those are really nice guns. We see them a lot. And again, the Weatherbys and the Ithacas were all really very well made. I don't want to speak for Connor, but I think they're fixable, Connor.
Yeah, they are. I mean, parts are not, I often joke that the 24 hour Ithaca, SKB, parts store is closed. They can be found. It takes some digging often, but they can be procured. And it's usually not a problem. It's just something to keep in mind that when things break, especially if they're, somewhat obscure components, a lot of small parts, they might be a bit difficult to find, but worst comes to worst, the parts can always be fabricated, if they need to. Of course, that comes with usually a bit of a higher repair cost, it's not the end of the world. If a part can't be found, a part can always be made for it if need be. It's something to keep in mind, when looking at SKBs.
And I would add that SKB, and this is a long story, too long for the podcast, but I should tell you, they support a lot of wood on the hold of the modern incarnation of the SKB Corporation supports some of the wood in the older guns.
Mm-hmm. And that's true.
Forearm disaster, and they were able. It was, and I wouldn't call it quite rough cut. It required some gunsmithing once it arrived, but it was it worked. So that's just out there. You call SKB; they're really very helpful. Modern incarnation of SKB.
Very good to know. Definitely very good to know. What else is on your list?
I'm a big Winchester 101 guy.
Yep, for sure.
Without a doubt.
How about some of the variants?
The 101, field. It's funny, the prices go up and down, but I would say you should expect to spend north of $1,000 on the 20, and certainly north of that on the 28. The 12s, if you go out into the internet, to the nattering nabobs who like to burn down the 12s, they do pack a punch. I will say that. But the 12, the XTRs, the ultralights, the 101 is just a really well built gun. I own three. People will call me and say, you know anything about the 101, and I can go on and on. A lot of them are 26-inch, which for me doesn't bother me. I like 26-inch field guns. The 12s can be had with longer barrels. So can the 20s. But I do really like the 101. The other thing, keep an eye out, is the Nikko version, right? The Japanese version of the 101. The Nikkos are really good guns. They're kind of hard to sell sometimes. Just because, again, you get into brand recognition, I don't get it, never heard of it, right? Even though the Winchester's got that, it's all American name, it was made in Japan. And the daily over-under too, right? But those daily fields that were made where they ended up making, the name escapes me right now, where they make
Moroku?
Moroku.
Yeah, so they were branded Daily Moroku.
Yeah.
Daily Moroku, yeah.
And that's really what I wanted to get at when I asked about some of the variants of the 101. There are the known players, but if you educate yourself and you're open to not having the more well-known brand on your shotgun, there's a ton of other options. Yep. A Nikko versus a Winchester 101, a Moroku versus a Browning, an SKB as opposed to even a Weatherby. These are basically identical guns. If you laid them side by side, this is obvious. In each of these cases, one brand represents the better known domestic brand name, and the other is the name of the actual company that is producing the gun. Moroku, by the way, is wildly popular in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mark 70 and a Mark 60, Connor, right?
Yeah, we do. And often, I mean, I've had
not Morokus. Really, sorry, Moroku.
Yeah, I've had Morokus in for several, you know, in for repair on the bench. And what's fantastic is they take Browning parts. You know what I mean? So, you know, often people will come in concerned, say, oh, I don't know if I can get parts for this. It's like, well, if it's of a certain era, which, you know, being a more modern era for the most part, they'll take Browning parts, which is fantastic. I mean, that makes my life infinitely easier. Of course, once you start stretching back a couple decades, then, you know, things get a little hairy. You know, I've run into a few that, I mean, again, that's another 24-hour parts store that is indefinitely closed. So, you know, it's something that makes, you know, repairs a little more difficult. But that being said, most parts can be fabricated if they need to be. It's just a matter of you know, how much you want to put into the gun. If you really love it and it's something special for you that you shoot well, then we can certainly, you know, yeah, get it fixed up.
Yep. Good point. I have a couple to add. Interestingly, this first one was mentioned on my Best Guns Under $1,000 episode, that would be the Ruger Red Label.
Yes.
A few years back when I recorded that episode, you could take your pick of used Ruger Red Labels for like $800 or $900. Now I think they're pretty firmly in the $1,200 to $1,500 range. I'd still say they're a good option to look at, though.
Yeah, I think the Red Labels are a great option especially for someone who's kind of like an average shooter. And Greg enlightened me too that the primary issue, well, speaking from my experience first, repairing Red Labels can be, I don't know what the right word is, maybe challenging. The mechanisms on a Ruger, there's a lot of things going on in that action, going whiz, pop, and bang to make that gun work. The parts counts it's very high. There's just a lot of things going on in there. They can be a little finicky. I've run into more than a few that are just a bit picky, with ammunition, which I know sounds strange, for an over and under, but, just, you'll have to believe me, they can be picky. And then it's, yeah, the issue too, the big issue for somebody who shoots like a lot, the guns aren't rebuildable. Once the guns are worn out, and again, Greg, you can speak more to this, but they are, once they wear out, there's really no way beyond a pretty technical welding job and refitting job. They can't really be put back on face. So once they're worn out, that's kind of it. There's unless you're willing to spend the money on that super, you know, advanced welding and refitting, that would require a very special gunsmith, somebody who's, you know, a really good welder, in addition to somebody who can fit barrels. So it's, it's just something to keep in mind. But again, you know, shooting out a gun is something that takes a long time and usually a diet of very heavy shells, and a lot of them. So not exactly a concern for your average shooter. So I don't want to freak anyone out, you know, but it's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that. And it's surprising a little bit because I feel like I can remember Bill Ruger himself said kind of at the launch of their Red Label back in the late 70s that he wanted to make an affordable over and under for the American shooter. Yeah. One that didn't require tons of handwork and fitting to build it, but that would be manufactured in higher numbers to keep those costs down. So hearing you say all that, it sounds like he kind of lost his way a little bit there with the overly complex internals. I've never seen the inside of a Red Label, but I probably would have guessed that it would have been kind of the same simple,
yeah,
almost Spartan design that the outside has.
It is. I mean, I'd be happy to send you a picture, you know, at some point. They've been described to me, and I've experienced this, as a mousetrap. They're just what's the word you use, Greg, is it
a Rube Goldberg?
Oh, well, yeah, that's a good one. Absolutely. And that's actually a really great, It's definitely a Rube Goldberg machine. They're not alone. There are a lot of guns out there that are of that essence. But the red labels, I know people love them. They're cool. I enjoy picking one up and shooting it when I can. But it's just something to keep in mind that, and quite frankly, too, there are a lot of gunsmiths around the country, even shotgun specific gunsmiths, who won't work on them. You know, it's just that because they can be very finicky. I work on them. There are plenty of people who do, but actually some of the ones who folks refuse to work on end up at my shop. So, you know, it's one of those things to keep in mind. I know that people, you know, American shooters have a love affair with them and I get that. But it's just something to keep in mind that they can be finicky, and they are a bit of a challenge at times to work on.
Brian, I'm glad you brought up the red label, because the one thing is that they have a devoted following. People love those guns. And sometimes when they'll come in, the demand is actually high. What makes a red label languish is if it's a hand engraved one or sort of a fancier one, the owner, the consigner, will price it too high. They think they've got a $4,000 collector piece there, right? The guarantee seller is the 28 gauge instant. People will argue, one of the greatest quail guns, you know, ever. They love those guns. But usually the people who are buying them, they're buying their second, their third, their fourth, their fifth. These are guys who are accumulating, and women who are accumulating their collection of red labels. And a really cool red label is the Orvis red label. And I don't know if you know about that gun. But one of the first runs of red labels came through Orvis, about 400 of them, with blued receivers, and they all had a really cool quail medallion. Quail medallion located in the forearm?
No, in the grip cap, I think.
Grip cap. And so we have a bag, and that was done in Manchester. So we have a bag of the old Ruger quail medallions that we would put into the gun. And I want to say about 400 of these. The fact they say Orvis on them doesn't make them anything other than I think they're cool. They're blued receivers, not the polish that brushed steel we tend to be familiar with. And we did a Ruger Orvis Ruger red label and sold a lot of them.
Very cool. Very cool. A couple other outliers that I wanted to add to our list. Earlier I mentioned the B Rosini guns. The Arum and the Upland EL are both really good guns to look for.
Mm-hmm. And the LL Bean Rosini too.
Yep, I think those were the I Rosini guns or the Fair guns, not the B Rosini.
I think the LLB, and again, I can't. I know that LLB did a lot of Rosini, and it could be from the Fair side. But the LLB Rosinis are nice little guns.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that would be I Rosini. That LL Bean worked with. I think that New England Arms or NEA and LL Bean both brought in some really nice Fair guns. Again, kind of back in the late 90s, maybe early 2000s.
Yeah, we've seen a few older Fairs. I'm trying to, if I had my computer open, I could pull up. We sold a couple Fair Rosinis a few years ago, some sporting guns that were really nice. And I think they were $2,800 guns. They were in really good shape. I do recall they had nice case coloring and they had really knockout wood on them. But just to get back to that Arum, if you can find an Arum, actually, I had an Arum come in, a 20 gauge Arum. I sold it immediately, and just out of nowhere, a second one came in. And I called the guy who bought the first one, and I said, do you have any interest in this one? He bought it immediately. I never even put it on Guns International. So obviously there's a devoted following of that Arum that people really think it's a hell of a good gun.
Yeah. Let's move on to sporting guns. And this one for me is really easy. One of you earlier mentioned the Beretta 682. And without a doubt, this is the dedicated Clay's gun that I will recommend to someone that asks me what a first target gun, what a good first target gun should be. I actually own two of these. Right now, my daughter shoots one, and I have another that I just kind of hang on to as a backup Clay's gun. This 682 takes that Honda Accord Reliable Beretta 680 series, but then builds it up to be a serious clay gun with kind of a heavier frame, wider rib. It's got a sporting style stock and usually longer barrels and most importantly, replaceable high wear parts.
Right.
Since this is a 680 series gun, you can still find new barrel sets for them. And then best of all, and I'll kind of give a plug to our sponsor, Cole Gunsmithing. you can get almost plug and play near OEM beautiful wood sets on Cole's websites to correct things like a short length of pull or to change the stock type from a field to a sporting, or just to dress it up. These are gold medal winning, serious competition guns, and they fit right into this price range. So I think that they are an absolutely fabulous option.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, I have a hard time, not buying them whenever I see them, because it's, like, especially the 682 series in general, but the 682 Gold E's are just, like, I pick those up. And again, that's from that era of Beretta I was talking about, that is just everything they were turning out was just, like, amazing. You know what I mean? And, you know, I pick up a Gold E and I have a hard time not, you know, trying to make an offer on it, because it's just such a cool gun, such a great handling gun.
Yep. I'm a fan of the 682 Gold. That's the one with kind of that simple receiver with, I think, what they called the graystone finish. Just a sharp looking gun.
We're all in agreement there. Yeah.
Yep. They're a great option.
And if you see one, grab it, because it's going to go fast. And I don't get a whole lot of them in, but when I do get them in, I can find that they go.
And the people who have them tend to keep them because they're just so great. Yep. You know,
absolutely. Absolutely. Other sporting options that I've got on my list. How about a Nikko 5000 or a 2200? Yep. Again, kind of a dedicated clays gun. A Renato Gamba Daytona. Again, a gold medal winning clays gun.
Yeah, the Gamba seems to suffer a name recognition problem.
Yeah.
And I would add, I'd throw in Meroki to that pile too.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Well, let's just quickly hit on a few side-by-sides to add to our list. I really only had a couple of them. Greg, earlier you mentioned Gamba. The Oxford and the London models are good ones to look at. The Merkel 47 is really nice. And then, you know, back to SKB, the 300 and the 400. Really, really good options in the side-by-side shotgun category. Greg, what are some of the side-by-sides that you had on your list?
Well, I would say on the side-by-side market, and I know that Connor's already bought and sold one. So the Orvis Arietta square action side-by-side 12 gauge. Let's just speak of the 12 gauge. You'll see them out there. People asking 45 up to 6. I just don't see it there, right? To me, the Orvis Arietta 12 gauge square action is a $2,500 to $3,000 gun. And they're really well made. They always have nice wood. And they'll last forever. And I would also say, if you're, you know, on the older gun side, and again, in condition, and I know we don't want to do, you know, buying a used gun 101. The LCs, the Parkers, the Sterlingworths, the Fox A grades, the Ithaca Hammerless, if they're in really nice condition, they're going to fit into this sort of price point that we're talking about. But those are all guns, and I'll let Connor speak to it, but those are all guns that definitely buy or beware.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so I do find that when people find an old Parker or an old Fox or an old Ithaca, you know, even on a less common scale, you know, the Lefevers and the Bakers, things like that. Great, you know, American doubles. But the issue is, you know, Greg had made a point before, you know, speaking to me that, you know, the newest Parker shotgun is over 100 years old. So what happened over time with these guns is they were messed with left and right, right? They were cut down, they were re-lengthened, they were mucked around with on the internals. They were polished, they were re-blued, they were, you know, also a lot of them were shot with really heavy cartridges that they weren't designed for. A lot of these guns were 2.5-inch chambers, and, you know, this guy and his father and his grandfather all shot 2 3/4 through it for, you know, 30 years. So, you know, it's something to keep in mind. I know, you know, again, I love them. I know many people in this country have a love affair with old American doubles. You just have to be so careful, especially when people are asking a lot of money, you know, in that, you know, $1,500 range or what have you. you're going to want to ask a lot of questions. And if you can put your hands on the gun, that's even better. And of course, you know, Greg, as mentioned too, we're happy to help. You know, you're welcome to give us a call here at Orvis Shotguns, and we're happy to lend our opinion for a few minutes and just chat with you about it. You know, cause the worst thing is we don't want to see somebody buy a gun, especially something like that, spend a lot of money and you know, have an issue with it or something isn't right. And you know, it's just you have to be really careful with those guns, because over the years they've been changed around and modified. And every now and then you'll come across one that's in beautiful original condition and hasn't been screwed with. But those are kind of few and far between. So you just have to be really careful.
I would add, you know, on those older guns, measure the length of the barrels or half that you're buying it, because we have 26-inch guns that are 25 and 4/16 or 4 1/4, or we recently got in a Parker that is 27 7/8, right?
It's like, yeah,
that's come out of the factory that way. And if you get a look at the muzzle, whoever did the work, it's okay. If you put a straight edge across the top of the muzzle, you probably get a little wobble there. A lot of these barrels have been cut. They were dropped, bang, smashed into rocks, right? And that doesn't, guns probably works just fine, but you should always get an accurate measurement from the dealer of the length of the barrel. We spend a lot of time when we get these older used guns in, running our fingers up and down the barrels, looking for dents, looking inside, looking for when bulges or dents have been repaired over time. And it's important that those things are all checked. Look at the bluing, if they've been re-blued, see if they polished over or they blued over pitting. Look down the barrel, see if the barrels have been lapped. And sometimes that requires the eye of a skilled gunsmith or someone who evaluates guns for a living. So buy with confidence from a dealer that you know is a straight shooter. And again, there are some good guns out there, some good field guns out there, those early American side-by-sides. Just got to be careful about what you're buying.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure they're on face. And Connor's point, there are a lot of them. An associate that I work with, an Orvis associate, his dad sent him a Parker 16 gauge that he'd been shooting for years. And we brought it to the shop, take a look at it, and our gunsmith, you know, dropped chamber gauges into it. It was a 2.5-inch gun, and his dad and his granddad have been shooting 2 3/4-inch through it for 50 years. And it was loose as a goose. And, you know, and his dad said, it doesn't matter. I said, it does. It does matter.
Yeah. Yeah. I generally always recommend to a new shooter to hold off on a vintage shotgun, at least until they get, you know, kind of a certain knowledge base with these guns. I feel like that's just sort of a next level.
You're going
to
want to have some expertise. Yeah. You're going to want to have some level, or at least some people who know what they're talking about, because it's so easy to see this cool old gun that, you know, we love old guns. I absolutely love them, but they come with, you know, a lot of baggage, and oftentimes, so you have to really, before you get hosed, you know, have somebody look at it, ask a lot of questions. And it's just something you want to, and to some degree too, with, I know we haven't really touched on it at all. But you know, English guns too. And just to touch on it really quick, you know, old Birmingham guns, old box locks, side locks, you know, a lot of times they can be had for a reasonable price. Ask the questions. You know what I mean? Because these guns, from their journey from England over to the United States, a lot of times have been taken out of proof and modified, cut down, lengthened, all this stuff that could have been sleeved at one point. You know, we don't know. So it's all these things that before you get hosed on a gun that you're paying, you know, you may or may not be paying too much for, just you got to ask the questions. You know, and I'm sure, you know, we could come up with a list. I'm sure you've already touched on that in other episodes, but it's something that you need to really be aware of before you spend the money.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Any final thoughts, guys? Did we leave anything out?
Yep, a couple on the side by side, the Silverhawks.
Oh yeah, great gun.
Beretta Silverhawks, cool guns, and can be had in that price point we're talking about. And one gun we didn't touch on is the Browning BSS,
mm-hmm. You know,
the sideways Satori, and those are great. Those are great guns, and I. Been helping a client chase one down for a while, looking for a driven bird gun. And the Browning BSS, I would hardly call it a, you know, a lightweight, dandy field gun. But they're built like tanks. They're always well built. They command a somewhat premium price out on the web, certainly in the sub gauges. But the BSS is a, if you're looking to get your first side by side, you don't want to be the shooter who has to learn how to use a double trigger. Go grab a BSS,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Anything else?
That's about all I had. You know, just be careful out there. You know what you're spending your money on. There's a lot of gems and there's a lot of not gems. So, you know, just be aware of that. And I think it's, you know, again, make some friends who know what they're talking about and also do some reading on yourself and just make sure you know what you're getting into. But in that price range, like I've mentioned a few times now, you can get a lot for your money. Whether you're looking for a sporting gun or a game gun. And it's, you know, you could do really well. You could also, you know, not do so hot. You know, so just something to be aware of, you know.
And I would add that we don't have to have any skin in the game to offer advice about gun sales.
Yeah.
So Connor and I are available. And
yeah, give us a call.
Give me a call or reach out to me at gunshop@orvis.com or carsonc@orvis.com with a question of, a link to a gun you're thinking about buying, we are more than happy to offer advice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll give a hat tip to Orvis. I've purchased several guns from you guys over the years. Greg, you have always been responsive and ready to answer questions and discuss the listing that I'm calling about or emailing about. You always want to remember, buy the seller. And every time that I've ever reached out to the Orvis Gun Room, the experience has been top notch.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Guys, this has been a lot of fun. I think we've got a lot of good information here and built a pretty good list. Thank you both for helping out.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Okay, Ryan, anytime.
Well, those are two great and knowledgeable guys. I lost track, but that was between 20 and 30 guns that we named for you to check out in this price range. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, this was a listener request. If you have a question or suggestion for an episode, don't hesitate to reach out. One of my favorite parts of this podcast project is interacting with fellow shotgun enthusiasts just like you. And before we wrap up, I want to thank our sponsors. Negrini's Italian Design Crash Test Double Wall Bumper Technology is the strongest, lightest weight case in the shooting sports and outdoor industry. How light? Up to 65% lighter than most aluminum gun cases. All Negrini cases are TSA compliant and come with a limited lifetime warranty. Luxury finishes in 100% Italian leather are available to complement your beautiful shotgun. With over 40 years of experience making the best quality cases, you can trust that Negrini has you covered. Boschieri and Pellagri is recognized worldwide for its design, production, and distribution of premium shot shell ammunition and components. From its custom powders and plastic wads to its innovative Gordon system cases and loaded ammunition, B&P has a long demonstrated history of providing high quality shot shell products for smoothbore guns for use in competition and in hunting. B&P Shot Shells, primed to perform. Established in 1985, Cole Fine Guns and Gunsmithing is a family-owned and operated business serving shotgun enthusiasts across the United States and beyond. Known as the Beretta experts and specializing in European shotguns, there is no better place to make your next purchase or access a full menu of shotgun services. Cole has developed a team of shotgun experts, the most complete in the industry, and the most extensive service offerings in the industry. For a limited time, Cole is offering special pricing on new DT-11s with either custom stocks or TSK adjustable stocks. Details are available at www.colegun.com. Find out for yourself what the Cole experience is all about. Since 1937, Dewberry of Ireland has been expertly combining rugged, all-weather functionality with timeless style for both men and women. Not only are they home to the Galway boot, the iconic, original, waterproof, breathable, Gore-Tex-lined leather Wellington boot, but they also craft a wide collection of footwear, clothing, and accessories to handle whatever conditions life might throw at you. Check them out at dewberry.com to discover your perfect fit. Stay tuned for more shotgun shooting and sporting lifestyle content.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of A Break in the Action. Want to hear your voice on a future episode? Leave a message, ask a question, or suggest a topic on our listener line at 317-662-4520. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and visit us at abreakintheaction.com.